With the threats facing the Galaxina M41 ever worsening, the Departamento Munitorum requires your help. Deploy your forces today in Tacticus, the ultimate Warhammer 40,000 mobile strategy game. Featuring fast-paced tactical battles, a rewarding progression system, turn-based PvE and PvP battles, collaborative boss fights, and a rewarding gameplay cycle of progression, achievement, grind, and strategy. You will command legendary warriors from across the galaxy, with each faction bringing unique strengths and traits. Tacticus is continually updated with new heroes and delivers an ever-evolving battlefield. Limited time events engage your factions in different ways, learning to use their specific traits and builds to your advantage. If you're new to Tacticus, now's the perfect time to jump in, as Tacticus campaigns can be played as a mirror whilst taking on the enemy role and securing components to ensure your squad strength will become critical. There is ever more to explore in Tacticus than you may well expect, so take command today, learn to crush your enemies, and lead your faction to victory. Explore Tacticus and support my channel by clicking through on the links below, or scan the QR code on screen now and join the ever-growing community of Tacticus today. We return to my series asking, what would domination of the galaxy look like via the lens of a specific faction? In our past discussions, we have so far explored the terrifying prospect of what form chaos achieving total dominion over the galaxy would look like. We've also explored the relentless scourge of the Tyranids consuming all life in their path. Both of these scenarios result in the large-scale destruction of the galaxy. One through the unchecked corruption of the warp, the other in a mindless wave of biological extermination. There are, of course, factions whose own scenarios of galactic domination would look entirely differently, though. Plus, I know there are those of you still licking salt from the wounds of my somewhat tongue-in-cheek Tau video years ago, have been waiting for me to be more positive. Will that happen today? Maybe. So, what if the future of the galaxy was not one of chaos or devastation, but of structure, progress, and ideological control? And no, I'm not talking about the soul-crushing autocracy of the Imperium. Maybe you missed the keyword, progress, there. The Tau Empire are a young, ambitious force, even if they're not able to completely overcome all opposition. And I'm not going to reiterate the entire history of the Tau here today. But we can consider how they may at least contain some of the biggest problems, how they might be able to expand the borders of its empires and establish something approaching or the earliest beginnings of absolute rule. Could such a vision be realized? And if so, would it bring peace or merely replace one form of oppression with another, which is something baked into the Tau ideology, like it or not? Also, I want to remind that this series is not just about what it would look like if a single faction could achieve galactic domination. It's also about if it were even possible at all. I want to consider their limitations and that maybe it's just not feasible unless there were significant shifts in power throughout the galaxy. Connected with this is the fact that unlike the all-consuming hunger of the Tyranids or the ruinous schemes of the Dark Gods, the Tau do not seek destruction and slaughter for its own sake. Their mission is one of order, expansion, and the assimilation of disparate races into a unified empire. So it is a more constructive goal, and in many ways that makes things far more difficult. If all you're doing is sweeping through systems, consuming them like the Tyranid, then it's relatively straightforward, as opposed to, say, the Great Crusade, where we saw how it is not so simple when you need to secure a planet with as little damage as possible before moving on, not to mention the difficulty in shifting the ideological outlook of a world. And those were worlds already occupied by humanity. Now imagine you're the Tau, and you're facing the prospect of subjugating a galaxy of alien worlds. It's a daunting prospect. There is one caveat, however. in that the Tau conduct themselves in something of a more respectable manner than the Imperium did during the Emperor's Great Crusade, as the rules of that scenario were effectively submit or be destroyed. With the Tau, yes, they will still wage war against those who resist them, but at least your culture will be more reasonably approached before, say, being amalgamated into the Empire. And I've discussed before and speculated about how beneficial it could have been potentially for the Imperium to have done that with some of the more advanced worlds in the Crusade. Nonetheless, this doesn't equate to making missions of conquest any easier, but it's perhaps more appealing to be offered something alternative to the Imperium beating everybody into submission and then cutting away the wastage. The philosophy that drives the Tau is of course known as the Greater Good. It is their ideological framework designed to unify the galaxy under a single cooperative system. To some, this represents the best hope for an alternative to the cultural and technological stagnation of the Imperium. To others, it is an insidious form of mind control demanding absolute submission of all who fall within its purview. So as I said, when we're considering any civilization in this series, the question of whether the Tau could achieve total galactic domination is not simply about straight military conquest, it's about cultural amalgamation and integration, logistics, diplomacy, and the capacity to sustain such an empire across thousands of years. So the existing context from the Imperium having done this already is more relevant here. It is easy to make sweeping generalizations about the Crusade and that it boiled down to independent worlds facing the choice of submission or destruction. But to preserve my video comment reading sanity, yes, it was very obviously far more nuanced than this. But my point is simply that the Emperor had little patience for variable rates of adjustment in the new Imperium. The man literally damaged Astarte's genetics just to grind out more of them and push through the Crusade. Planets that survived the Age of Strife had been so long disconnected from other human worlds that they'd further developed their own cultures. The Emperor sought to sweep this away, and so when the Astartes arrived in a world, they would very often bring huge numbers of the Imperial army with them to then garrison and stabilize a world. Alongside this, they had iterators and all manner of diplomatic negotiators who would assist in steadily deconstructing whatever ideology a planet had developed and redirecting it onto the path of the Imperial truth. And a small aside about the word bearers. The word bearers often are just thought of as this group who tried to push this religious view onto new worlds during the Crusade, that the Emperor was a god. And that was true. But also, they were more sensitive and took a longer period of time to instill these ideas in new worlds, so much so that they became bogged down in planets where they were trying to convert them. And the Emperor basically said, "What on earth are you doing?" And they had to have an investigation about why it was taking the word bearers such a long time to progress with the Crusade, as opposed to other legions who were just smashing through from one world to the next. It was not always easy though. Some worlds folded almost immediately and were welcoming of the Imperium. Others resisted heavily and took years of occupation and struggle to be reforged in the vision of the Emperor. And of course, this is the trouble when you're on a vast mission of conquest. And it's why the Astartes legions were so necessary, as they were not only a conquering army, but a strong deterrent to a collapse of all the ground they had secured behind them. In fact, that was another reason why, over time, recruitment for the legions was so necessary. They lost Space Marines during the Crusade, not just to the attrition of war, but also the need to garrison a small force on some worlds to maintain its stability, usually bolstered by the Imperial army. All of this is to say that for the Tau, one of the greatest obstacles to any expansion is this logistical challenge, in not only the required weight of numbers and material required for galactic rule, but also the ability to secure planets and then use them to bolster future efforts, as was done in the Crusade. Many planets in the Crusade became strong recruitment centers for the Imperial army that was continually needed in the expansion of the Imperium. For the Tau, their rapid technological advancements are impressive, but it doesn't alter the fact that they are still an insanely small empire compared to the Imperium of Man, which spans millions of worlds. The Tau are also significantly hamstrung by their lack of warp-based faster-than-light travel, which is a severe limiting factor, not only to the speed at which they can expand, but also to respond to distant threats. Although I suppose the Imperium is not exactly bringing its A-game in that regard either, with fleets turning up to an Imperial system centuries too late to find nothing but ashen ruins. That scale, though, of the Tau Empire as it stands is a major problem. I think often people do not realise just how small, comparatively, the Tau are in the state of the galaxy, despite them being a major faction. Because unlike the Imperium, which can rely on its immense size to absorb losses, the Tau would actually need to carefully manage every world they bring into their fold and minimise material losses. I think it's fair to say that without a revolutionary breakthrough in interstellar travel, the Tau's expansion would likely be outpaced by the natural growth and resistance of the galaxy's older, more entrenched powers. Most often the reason the Tau still exist is that they're just not worth dealing with most of the time. This isn't to say that they're not capable of winning battles, but their expansion is so slow, the resources required to deal with them are just better spent elsewhere. Perhaps the most intriguing question in considering Tau domination is whether their rule would truly be the utopia they claim it should be, the Tau outlook being that galaxy free of war where all work together in harmony. Yet history has shown that their vision of unity is far from voluntary. Those who refuse to accept the greater good are given two choices, compliance or annihilation, which sounds very familiar, doesn't it? And while the Imperium rules through brutal oppression and religious dogma, the Tau's form of control is arguably just as strict, if not more insidious, through propaganda, technological surveillance and re-education. They enforce ideological conformity at every level of society, although thinking about it, I suppose the Imperium has a habit of mind-wiping people against their will quite regularly. But I'll say, I still don't understand why I often get so much pushback in talking about the Tau in this regard. It's literally the way the Tau run their society. And I've said many times, the differences between the Tau and Imperium are far less than they might appear to be, which we may come back to later on. But the question remains, would a galaxy ruled by the Tau be a place of constructive advancement and, dare we say it, peace? Or simply another form of totalitarianism masked behind the language of progress and unity? Oh sorry, I was forgetting you can't see me sarcastically nodding along, can you? For the Tau to rule the galaxy, they would need to overcome every major power, or at least be in a state where they can push back against them. They would need to establish an infrastructure capable of governing a near limitless domain and sustain their ideological cohesion for millennia. To overcome doesn't necessarily mean to destroy either. It simply means that they could find a means or scenario by which to deal with the more existential threats like the Orcs, Tyranid, and Necron. They also would need to avoid the stagnation and collapse that has crippled other great empires before them. So the journey to total control for an empire like the Tau would not be a simple matter of conquest. It would be a war requiring a multi-phase strategy, diplomacy, ideology, logistics, and endurance, as we've talked about. Could the Tau truly dominate the galaxy? I think it leans toward the more unlikely side of the scale than the likes of the Tyranids, Chaos, Necrons, and Imperium. Also, because of the limitations and the timescale to which this would take place over, I think today we will be doing more of a Tau expansion as the first foothold is secured, being the most vital. But I think given some other circumstances, there is viability to their expansion in a broader sense. As I said though, the more interesting question for me is, if they did so, would the grim darkness of the 41st millennium be replaced with a true golden age, or merely a new kind of oppression? This is what I'll seek to consider and understand as we explore the fate of the galaxy under the rule of the greater good. Now, a staple section of this series is the question, is it achievable? So far with Chaos and the Tyranids, the answer was a pretty straightforward yes, but with some caveats. When it comes to the Tau, it is not so straightforward. The defining characteristic of the Tau Empire is its ability to adapt and evolve its technology rapidly as it expands. Throughout its history, the Tau have repeatedly developed superior weaponry and strategies, allowing them to claim victory where the odds were not necessarily in their favour. One such example was early in their expansion when they found themselves in conflict with the Orcs. The situation looked very grim, but the development of pulse rifles and superior armour technology by the Earth Caste enabled them to counter the grinding resilience and the brutality of the Orcs. So in the Tau, we often see what is observed in real-world warfare, where the urgency of conflict accelerates innovation. Now, the Tau already developed technology faster than others, either due to the fact that those, such as the Necron, were at a developmental dead end, or through their culture of stagnation, like the Imperium. So it's somewhat ironic that this rapid technological advancement reflects human history, where progress surges forward in times of war, under the pressure often of necessity. Yet, now here we are in M41, where the Imperium, despite being in a state of constant war, has ground to a halt in its development. Yet the Tau, driven by their expansionist goals and relatively small population, embody this philosophy of keeping all options on the table and seeking solutions to impossible problems. Unfortunately, despite their strength when it comes to innovation, the Tau's diplomatic acumen is less refined. While they have successfully incorporated many alien species into their empire, their interactions with major galactic powers have often been clumsy or outright disastrous. A striking example of this was their destruction of an Eldar maiden world, an act that deeply damaged potential alliances with the Eldari. However, probably worth noting that the Imperium of Man is far worse, having such acts many times over, and they still somehow managed to gain alliance with the Eldar, although likely out of their own self-serving goals, of course. But the point is, missteps are not unique to the Tau. Nevertheless, the Tau have demonstrated a ready ability to form temporary alliances, even with Imperial defectors, which suggests that under the right conditions, they could leverage diplomacy to expand their reach, particularly among factions or human worlds disillusioned with the general state of things or imperial rule. In a speculative scenario, if the timing was right, this could be one part of a strategy that could significantly increase Tau opportunity. Elsewhere, the Tau have proven that they can engage formidable forces like the Necron and Tyranid with relative success. But in many cases, that success has been contingent on external factors rather than purely their own raw strength. In encounters with the Necron, their survival often hinged on Necron disorganization or engaging smaller, more isolated tomb worlds rather than full-scale dynasties. Against the Tyranids, while they have developed impressive countermeasures, those victories have also typically relied on fortuitous circumstances or external intervention rather than outright Tau superiority. And so that is a fundamental limitation of the Tau if we're talking about galactic expansion. Quite simply, their empire is not yet equipped to withstand prolonged warfare against existential threats on the scale that the Imperium or the Eldar routinely endure. The Tau can win battles, even campaigns, but they prefer to be on the offensive. It suits their fighting style and the formation of their forces. But when they're forced to defend worlds, they've routinely suffered major defeats. And nowhere is that vulnerability more evident than in its confrontations with the Imperium of Mankind. When the full might of the Imperium is directed toward them, the Tau very much struggle to hold their ground. The Damocles campaign is a crucial case study illustrating that. And during that conflict, the Tau suffered heavy defeats when confronted by a unified Imperial force consisting of Space Marine chapters, Astra Militarum regiments, and even deployed Assassinorum operatives. In the Damocles campaign, the Tau threw everything they could at the humans. They really did try to defend and hold their ground. But despite their advanced technology and respectable strategy, the sheer scale and power of the Imperial military forced them to retreat, thus demonstrating their limitations. It's not about their combat capability, it's about the cold, uncompromising logistics of the wars of attrition which define M41. The battles are not measured. The technology and the scale is so extreme that it often comes down to just who has more disposable forces, which is why I've often noted that the true currency of the Imperium is human lives. That is how the Imperial Guard, the Militarum, tend to fight. They just send a massive amount of human fodder in the rough direction of the enemy and usually prevail. Now, that sounds a bit negative toward the Tau, and some of you are probably already rolling your eyes going, oh, here we are, Lutin says they've got no chance. Well, hold on, okay? Because one of the Tau's greatest assets is something the Imperium completely dismissed long ago. The ace up the Tau's sleeve is their willingness to integrate other species into their empire, or, as Hatemonger would say, aliens. The Imperium sees Xenos as irredeemable threats. It's deeply xenophobic and will basically kill anything that is not strictly human at every opportunity, except for, you know, when the Lord Primarch of the Ultramarines has the potential to be returned to lead the Imperium. Strangely, they were a bit more permissive in that specific scenario when the Elder helped them out. Now, jokes aside, the Imperium's outlook is a little bit more mixed than just being entirely xenophobic. There are Inquisition forces known to keep the odd alien along. There are those like the Jacaro that are sort of tolerated and seen as being potentially beneficial. The Imperium is just most aggressive against the aliens that are, you know, trying to exterminate them. But I think overall, the Emperor just wanted to enact a blanket approach because it was easier than trying to integrate all those alien worlds and make the whole thing a lot more complicated. The Tau, however, are the polar opposite. They actively incorporate alien technology and knowledge. They often absorb unforeseen advancements in the process. And this openness to incorporating species that otherwise may be overlooked, whether it be the Psyche Nikasa, the Kroot's fierce brutality, or the harassing strength of the Vespid, this ability to adapt and involve other species means they could develop unexpected breakthroughs, allowing them to counter enemies they were previously unprepared for, or to solve challenging problems for isolated worlds, which could increase diplomacy between them. It's this willingness to evolve and embrace diversity in their war doctrine that could be their key to surviving against more experienced and entrenched enemies. It at least offers them some unusual opportunities to develop weapon strength and tactics that could be difficult for others to plan defences against. But again, unfortunately, the overall scale of war in the 41st millennium is something that cannot be easily just worked around. The Achilles heel of the Tau is not necessarily their strategy or firepower, but as I said, it's just the raw numbers. The Imperium can afford to sacrifice entire planetary populations if necessary. The Tau, by contrast, have a relatively small population and have to be cautious with their losses. And that fundamental issue means their direct warfare against the Imperium, or indeed any major galactic faction, is just entirely unsustainable unless several key conditions align. For the Tau to expand first on a local scale, multiple factors need to work in their favour. If they wanted to expand on a galactic scale, they're going to require some kind of temporary alliance, at least with one major power, to just prevent a full-scale war and for them being overwhelmed. They'd also need a circumstantial major distraction, such as a resurgent Orc War or a Tyranid High Fleet unexpectedly striking toward the heart of the Imperium. This would, as we've seen before, make them then a lower priority, the Imperium forced to divert attention and resources. Critically, the Tau would need to have all their pieces ready on the board to execute a masterful strategy. And that alone wouldn't be enough, as speed would be so very key. They would need agents already working, maybe embedded, in key Imperial systems to trigger significant defections from Imperial human populations, not dissimilarly to the Genestealer cult, for example. They want to maximise disruption, bolster their numbers also. They need to be ready not just to subjugate, but gamble on providing human recruits with powerful Tau equipment to increase their strength and generate a sustainable fighting force. Their path to anything approaching dominance is not one of brute conquest, but of strategic opportunism and precise adaption. And I think most critically, it would take time. This would certainly not be a steamrolling conquest that smashed system after system. It would be an extended campaign over generations focused on their strengths in insurgency, diplomacy, technology, and tactical execution whilst avoiding unwinnable direct confrontations. It's going to be about exploitation of specific circumstances. There are other problems which come alongside that. Internal stability would present a serious challenge, because while the Tau promote themselves as a harmonious society where all castes and species work in tandem for the greater good, beneath that facade there are deep structural weaknesses. The rigid caste system that organises Tau society leaves little room for individual ambition, creativity, or dissent. So while that system has allowed for efficiency in their expansion, it also creates fertile ground for potential rebellion. Should any caste or amalgamated species within the empire begin to question their role and push back, the ruling elite of the town, known as the Ethereals, maintain their order through this mysterious influence, something that again many prefer to pretend did not exist, but it does. And so for the Tau, the loss of any Ethereal can be a devastating cultural shock. In a time of expansion and war, we saw an Ethereal assassinated by the Imperium. So were their greater authority ever to be undermined through internal subversion or external sabotage, that empire could rapidly descend again into civil war, as I've mentioned previously, as it did with the ancient Tau. And this is another point of high danger in the Tau's vision of unity, that any fracture in the control through the Ethereals could quickly escalate to a collapse of their entire empire, and never more would they be at risk of that during some kind of expansion. So to reach out into the galaxy, there is more than just the Imperium to contend with. The Tau also have to be adaptable enough to handle forces that are fundamentally incompatible with their vision. The Orcs and their unending tide of destruction, driven by little more of a philosophy than having a good scrap and a laugh. The Tyranids, the hyper-adaptive hive organism that can't be reasoned with. The Necrons, their vast ancient technology and sense of galactic entitlement. Because through the lens of the Necron, the Tau are nothing. They're little more than an upstart species destined to be eradicated, if not just fail, under their own shortcomings. The Eldari, though, could present something of an opportunity. This is a more complex case. Certainly, they would never willingly submit to the rule of what they see as a lesser race. In fact, even now within the Tau Empire, there are questions about some of their incorporated species, like the aforementioned Kroot and Vespid, being sustained in the long term. But Eldar cooperation might be plausible, and it may have to be the linchpin on whether anything is feasible for the Tau in terms of galactic expansion. But there are a few interesting scenarios to consider. The bottom line is, though, that the Tau would need a perfect storm of galactic shifts to create an opening for their expansion, and only in that way could they realistically achieve any kind of significant gains. So now we're getting into a little bit more of the details when it comes to the Tau expansion. But before we speak to other factions, there is another unusual detail to consider. You see, the Imperium, Necron, Tyranid, Orc and the Eldar, as we've noted, are very much spread all across the galaxy. The Tau are very much not. They occupy this tiny little region in the east of the galaxy. And that was even before the Cicatrix Maledictum, the Great Rift, made things considerably worse. Now, the Tau are basically trapped in this galactic cul-de-sac. They cannot reasonably travel to the north or to the east. To the south of their position is Ultramar and Macragge, probably not going to be many worlds that are open to hearing the ideology of the greater good there. And if the Ultramarines could see off one of the worst Tyranid invasions in the history of the galaxy, chances are the Tau might not fare particularly well there. But the Tau are currently engaged in their fifth sphere expansion. The sixth sphere expansion is not particularly clearly defined yet, and that's still open to question where it's going to move to or its purposes. Now, there is only one main option for the Tau, in my opinion, and that is obviously to go west in the galaxy. And that brings them to a region otherwise known as the Charadon Sector. Now, this is a tough one, as I will explain, but I genuinely believe the Tau securing part or all of this is not completely implausible. If it were implausible, then this entire discussion would be just a non-starter, and I'd have to do some serious speculative lifting. But I think it's possible. But what is the Charadon Sector? Well, it is important, actually. It's a strategically vital, heavily industrialized region northwest of Ultramar. It features forge worlds, manufactorums, and is a key contributor to the war efforts of the Imperium. It has also long been a battleground for this reason, its resources and its strategic position attracting numerous Xenos and Chaos incursions. It's been subjected to the frequent targeting of Orcs who covet its rich industrial resources, and the usual suspects of Chaos cults, Dark Mechanicum, and so on. The Forge Worlds of Charadon are critical for the Imperium. They supply Titan Legions, Mechanicus Scutari Legion, and advanced war gear to the Imperium in general. What is key for the Tau is the contemporary weaknesses now seen in Charadon. Its future is very much open to speculation. Those existential threats have not gone away. But now, in the aftermath of a brutal campaign, it has suffered some of the most destabilizing wars. As the Tau leave their sphere territory heading west before Charadon, though, they reach Eidolim. Eidolim is a densely populated shrine world ruled by the Ministorum. During the Crusade, the Wordbearers claimed that planet, fostering their worship in the Emperor as a god. But when they were reprimanded for their beliefs by the Emperor on Monarchia, the Wordbearers abandoned this planet, leaving it to face its own corrective punishment. They would only return later in what was known as the Battle of Eagle Gate, seeking its destruction, and they would fail. The Ultramarines pushed back against the combined forces of the Wordbearers, World Eaters, and Black Legion, but the decisive battle occurred between Cato Sicarius and a demon prince of the Wordbearers. What's interesting for me, though, is the lone, unknown guardsman who intervened in that fight and turned the tide of the battle, and indeed the fate of the world. It is a very 40k story. So Eidolim, depending on what support it received, could be a tough nut to crack, but an important one in demoralizing the Imperium, and given the current state of events, it's quite feasible. Next, the Tau would come to the feral world of Drear. Not noted as being significant or really any description, therefore very likely ideal to build some kind of staging post and a new sphere for the Tau. Next is Altivfor. This is a Mechanicus night world, heavily polluted, a difficult world to break to be sure, a night world, but in isolation against the Tau, it's a matchup that I could see being plausible for them to overcome. After that would be a frontier world known as Borth Reas. A frontier world is basically a planet that has some small outposts, settlements and so on, but it's basically a resource extraction planet and little else. So again, no major defences or much of anything to worry about, a good planet for the Tau to secure. Those who are living on the planet there are really there to just cover the tithe to the Imperium, provide quantities of shock mine splinter ores and other valuable resources, all of which would be very useful for an expanding Tau sphere. Then they face the real meat of the scenario, the Charadon, Hive and Forge worlds. Now, I won't describe every single planet as we just did with these earlier ones, but it's basically a mix of Hive and Forge worlds. There are some Imperial Ministorum planets in the mix as well. Basically, it is a dense Imperial territory, and it wouldn't be easy, to be sure. But ordinarily, I would say that this was a one-way ticket for any Tau fleet. Were it not for the fact that the Charadon sector of Forge Worlds is only just beginning to recover from one of the most significant conflicts of late in the Imperium. The self-titled Charadon campaign saw Typhus lead a Death Guard invasion, corrupting worlds and spreading a horrific plague across the sector, not dissimilarly to the Plague War which came across Ultramar. The Imperial response was, of course, significant, but still barely enough to contain the corruption and prevent the total collapse of the sector. Forge World Metallica was besieged and importantly left crippled, importantly because it's questionable how much of the Titan force they would be able to field against, say, Tau coming in. The worlds of the system burned, warp storms raged all around, the planet's defenders stood alone against the onslaught. Exhaustion, isolation, despair consumed them as they strove to outlast the heretics. Eventually, amidst all the darkness, appeared light in the form of a battle group of the Indomitus Crusade, in answer to the region's cries for aid. This was led by Morven Vahl, the Abbess of the Sororitas. She brought alongside her a standard battle force of Imperials, enough to achieve a Pyrrhic victory and cling on to the sector. Unfortunately, by this point, Typhus had largely achieved his primary goals and so left the system. The warp storms then begin to calm, but many worlds are suffering still from the horrifying plagues of the Death Guard and Nurgle. Hive cities are scoured, Forge worlds burn. Most critically, all of this happened very recently in terms of the galactic timeline. This is the contemporary period. So, were the Tau to, perhaps also in conjunction with some other dire situation, push out into this direction, it could in fact be exactly the galactic beachhead required by the Tau, if not in fact their only realistic choice. But now we'll talk about some of the other factions in brief here. Then we'll circle back to finish up talking about how this could all play out. So let's imagine for a moment that the Tau could overcome the difficulties of their own localized sphere expansion and push out toward Charadon. The most restricting component of any Tau broader galactic spearhead would be, yes, the Imperium of Man. But while the Imperium is rife with inefficiencies, internal strife, and the stagnation of progress, it remains unavoidably the single largest military force in the galaxy, with a population scale that is, when taken as a whole, near to being inestimable. Thousands of years of steadily layered, over-engineered planetary defences, and also protected by the fanatical loyalty and/or devotion of the Adeptus Astartes, Sororitas, Imperial Guard, and Inquisition. Not to mention, of course, the immense power of the Imperial Navy, the Mechanicus, and its Titans. Put simply, the Imperium is not an empire that simply collapses under pressure. Even in its existing state of decay, threats of horrifying power face it on all fronts, yet its ability to wage total war far exceeds the capabilities of the Tau, surely thousands of times over. Imperial resistance is not merely a question of military strength, it is a matter of ideological entrenchment. While it is rumoured, definitely it's happened, that some worlds of the Imperium may have fallen into the spheres of influence of the Tau, the Imperium's belief in the divine right of the Emperor and its systematic rejection of Xenos rule makes any widespread cooperation challenging, if not impossible. In fact, the only reason, as we note, the Tau exist at all is that the Imperium has regularly had to deal with more pressing situations or other restrictive conditions, thereby preventing them from addressing the Tau in a more proactive way. If the Imperium really decided to exterminate the Tau from the galaxy, unless anything significantly changed, this would be well within the parameters of the Imperium's available military strength as it stands currently. So for the Tau to truly rise to dominance, something has to change there. The Imperium would need to experience a near total breakdown or be put under immense pressure. And that is also well within the realm of possibility for the contemporary Imperium, and as will be outlined by me right now. So for the Tau to have an opportunity, what you really need are several catastrophic events, which again is more than plausible. Now I'm going to start off with a very huge one, but it's not at all implausible. If the Golden Throne were to fail and the Emperor were to die, we do not know what could happen or how quickly something could happen. Now I can't specifically discuss that at length today, it's on the to-do list. It's hard to believe though that the Emperor would just disappear or be fully consumed by the warp in the fullness of time. However, I do think it's possible that the Imperium could be for some period absent of the Emperor. Terra could fall into civil war, different factions of the Imperium begin fighting for control, the Astronomicon would inevitably weaken if not fail, throwing the Imperium's ability to travel through the warp into complete disarray, thereby making it completely incapable of defending its territory. This would also cripple their interstellar communication and coordination, which from the lens of the Tau would make entire segments of the Imperium vulnerable to external conquest. Now to be very clear, this is the unlikely nuclear option of what ifs, but if this were to happen, I think it's safe to say it's open season on the Imperium. There's a high chance the Tau would be able to secure significant territorial gains in the east of the galaxy, but holding them is going to then be reliant on the Imperium not pushing back, and also other powerful enemies not taking a focused interest on scouring any newly held Tau worlds. But that is really the extreme outside possibility. So let's consider, even if the Emperor remained, there has existed for basically 10,000 years a continuing possibility of a major schism occurring within the Imperium, as I noted recently about the apostasy, but this did not really slide out of control to the point it could have done. I think in more recent times, things have become more stable in this respect with the return of Gilliman, but the prospect of some kind of second heresy or a large-scale secession of Imperial factions, it's not entirely impossible. It would create power vacuums, and in typical human fashion, you're going to see Imperial systems and sectors hungry for power then turn on one another should things begin to break apart. And that would be something that the Tau could directly exploit, or offer an alternative to war-weary planets who are just tired of the miserable grind of humanity. They would offer them the greater good. Alongside that, we've also explored the potential for chaos to consume the galaxy previously. And if you're paying attention to the contemporary lore, and as I always remind people most often, that comes not so regularly in the novels, but more often in campaign supplements. Remember, novels have a habit of being focused on primarily character development. Campaign material is the broader world building. This may also be something of a spoiler for those of you who are still working through the Nachmund series, and you know I don't really bother with spoilers unless it is very recent material. Anyway, here it comes. Basically, the Chaos Forces score a victory at Sanguaterra, which is seriously bad news for the Imperium. It throws into question the stability and validity of the Nachmund Gauntlet, so this is a very bad development. But maybe not if you were the Tau, because it raises the genuine prospect now that Imperial forces may be too preoccupied with chaos and other warp incursions to have difficulty with, or at least some kind of minimized capability in the sense of pushing back against any kind of Tau offensive. There is, though, one small problem with this, and that is that the Tau Empire exists on basically the other side of the galaxy. So it's extremely unlikely that the Imperium are going to be really redirecting forces from the eastern fringe to the galactic north of Terra, which is where the Nachmund Gauntlet is. However, as we described earlier, the Death Guard incursion and assault of Charadon had a similarly devastating impact, and has left those worlds considerably vulnerable, which is great news for those such as the Tau. Overall, you can get a picture that Chaos are launching assaults against the Imperium all over the place due to the Great Rift, and empowered Chaos forces are leaving significant areas of critical production crippled. Now, most importantly for the Tau is where the situation at Nachmund, Charadon, and indeed whatever were to follow next, could come into play in the sense of how it relates to other situations. Because the Imperium is already besieged more heavily than it ever has been, trapped in multi-front wars, the Necrons are being problematic, the Tyranid situation is ever more dangerous, orcs risk spilling out anywhere at any time. So there's considerable pressure on the Imperium already, not to mention the fact that the Imperium Nihilus, or Dark Imperium, is still very much a major problem. There's a huge section of the galaxy cut off from the light of the Astronomicon, and within that realm are worlds containing billions and billions of Imperial citizens, Astartes, military assets, and unsurprisingly, the Imperium is currently significantly focused upon securing that. So if the Tau were able to identify or receive intelligence that would allow them to identify further weakness which saw Imperial forces being redeployed elsewhere, suddenly vulnerable targets within their reach that were weakened or reduced in defensive capacity could become very viable targets to attempt to annex entire sectors without significant resistance. Now, of course, these are but merely a couple of scenarios, and I'm sure that, like myself, if you really sat down and went through, you could readily imagine many, many more. The key here is that the Imperium is taking some significant losses and facing very large challenges, thereby being placed under ever more pressure. Both of those factors for the Tau expansion would be very, very important. Next are the Tyranids, and really I only need to mention this briefly because we well know that they represent an existential threat to pretty much every faction in the galaxy. And while the Imperium, due to its territorial spread, bears the brunt of these invasions, the Tau have already faced Hive fleets before, notably Hive Fleet Gorgon. So if the Tyranids focus their attacks primarily on the Imperium or another major faction such as the Orcs, that's going to buy the Tau the time they need to expand, fortify, and develop new technology without fear of being heavily targeted. Alternatively, if a large portion of the Tyranid hive mind were to be lured deeper into the galactic core, perhaps by some massive psychic event around Terra and the Emperor, or just another great psychic beacon being triggered somewhere, the threat they pose to the outer galactic regions is going to diminish, and that's also going to allow the Tau to claim more worlds. So it's a pretty straightforward scenario really when it comes to the Tyranid, because from the Tau perspective, all they really need is for the Tyranids to keep doing what they are, harassing the Imperium, and also not focusing on Tau territory. Similarly with the Orcs, as another of the most numerous and unpredictable species, the Orcs remain enjoyably a constant wildcard. So let's go with the simple one first. If a massive Orc war were to launch itself at the Imperium, Chaos, the Necrons, whoever really, this is going to draw attention away from any prospective Tau expansion. The chances of that happening at almost any moment are pretty even odds. A worse scenario would be for some Orc war boss on the scale of Ghazghal Thraka, if not actually himself, to unite countless Orc warbands and again lead a world-ending war deep into the Imperium, as it has done in the past. Again, this isn't very complicated stuff. This would be a major, major problem for the Imperium, and one that importantly they could not just slow down and ignore. They'd be forced to deal with it and minimize, therefore, other issues. And really, in terms of galactic war, the Imperium is very often dealing with things in quite a triage mentality. Such an action of the Orcs is going to destabilize systems and entire regions of the galaxy, thereby forcing the Imperium to redeploy massive quantities of material against them, all of which is going to be very beneficial for the Tau, attempting to steal and expand other corners in the galaxy. Another possibility were if the Tau found some way by which to manipulate Orc behavior, not dissimilarly to how Imperial Inquisitors have in the past directed Xenos toward one another to create some locked-in battleground, as seen in Octarius. They could then trigger a conflict between different warbands, potentially leading them toward an entirely different front or blocking an area for the Imperium. And in that way, they could either use Orcs as a distraction to weaken rival factions, sweeping in to then claim territory. Or maybe they would try to create a situation of two groups of Orcs fighting one another, and the momentum of this inevitably ending up in a war. And if this was to be directed through some clever Tau strategy or technology, which I could fully believe would be feasible, they may be able to lure those Orcs toward a key Imperial installation, which could be timed precisely to when the Tau were launching an offensive in other systems. In terms of Charadon, though, there's a danger that the Orcs could take an interest in a collection of weakened Forge Worlds. So there is the dire scenario that if the Tau were able to move in there, they would then inevitably pay a price themselves as Orcs arrive en masse. And that could be a devastating situation for the Tau, because potentially they could end up with a net loss in terms of material energy spent and having nothing to show for it. The Necrons, of course, are one of the greatest long-term threats to basically any faction that hopes to rule the galaxy. But the key phrase is long-term. While the Imperium and Chaos actively battle one another, the Necrons are still slowly awakening, and many of their dynasties still lie dormant. If the Silent King or any of the other significant figures among the Necron were to suddenly accelerate a campaign to reclaim the galaxy along with the material forces to do so, that's going to be a major problem. But I would quite honestly imagine you might see some sort of Imperial Eldar alliance at that point to wage war against the Necron purely for their own survival. Now, while that may be good for the Tau in some respects, the Necrons have some truly insane technology, so overall it probably wouldn't play out very well for the Tau one way or the other. But I don't want to repeat myself either and say, oh well, the Tau could just deal with the Necron later. That's not a scenario that seems likely in the timescale that we're thinking about here. So really, the Necron either need to stay as they are in a semi-dormant state, or be preoccupied with other things in order for the Tau to have even half a chance of expanding. Which luckily is pretty much what the Necron are doing at the moment. They're expanding their pariah nexus areas, which nullify psychic activity, and it does appear that they have some sort of long-term plan to deal with or close the Great Rift, which could be a major factor in the power struggles within the galaxy. But the Tau are just really not even on their radar, which for the Tau is a very good thing. So then we have the Eldari. Now both the Craftworld and Drakkari Eldar pose an interesting challenge. While they are greatly weakened by M41, their ability to strike with precision, power, and to manipulate galactic events through foresight means they could still be a major roadblock to Tau expansion or an amazing potential ally. So first of all, if we're considering the Craftworld, we could well imagine them suffering a further significant blow, perhaps the complete destruction of a major Craftworld or an unforeseen war with Chaos or the Necron breaking out. Again, innumerable scenarios that just work to make things easier for the Tau or prevent the Eldar from bolstering other enemies like the Imperium. The far more interesting situation would be some kind of temporary or long-term cooperative pact. It could even be just an agreement of non-aggression. Diplomacy in and of itself, though, would be challenging, because while the Tau have historically had an easier time working with the Eldar compared to some other factions, in one instance they were invited on board Craftworld Luggernath after they collectively saw off the Tyranids of Tendril Gorgon, but that was an unusual instance. And while there may be some potential inroads with some of the Eldar, it is important to note that they have also just been completely ignored by them, because the Eldar see the Tau as being entirely beneath them and just irrelevant. I think for context, remembering that despite the Imperium humiliating the Eldar regularly with brutal defeats, the Eldar still see themselves as better and a higher form than the humans. So the Tau certainly will not fare much better. If the Eldar were ever to entertain working with the Tau, it would be because it offered them some existential benefit. All of that being true, the Eldar, like we say, are in a dire situation of late. Many Craftworlds are losing souls also to the Inari, Beeltan was devastated, and generally there are just schisms in the Craftworld Eldar. You have figures like the quoted Eldrad Ulthran at the start of today being a disruptor. The point is, there is, I believe, room within the Eldar somewhere for a portion of their number to be open to engaging with the Tau, most especially if the Tau can show their strength in expansion. But the Eldar have suffered greatly in recent times, and something like this would not be entirely implausible. If the Tau could convince the Eldar that their expansion was a preferable alternative to full Imperial resurgence, which it probably very much would be, then they may be able to co-opt their influence rather than suffer their resistance. And I think another interesting aspect is that this would be a scenario that is not one of destruction, as we saw with Chaos and the Tyranids, but one of a constructive, growing alliance, which makes quite the nice change. So lastly, I have to include this one, and I do apologise for the repetition, but for the sake of completion, one of the things that the Tau needs to overcome is not an enemy, but their own limitations. Because even if every external factor is aligned in their favour, the Tau themselves would still need to undergo significant transformation to handle anything beginning to approach a galaxy-spanning empire. Firstly, somehow, they must try to improve or overcome their FTL limitations. The Tau's lack of warp travel is a major bottleneck in their expansion, because the distances between systems are just so incredibly immense. If they were able to develop a new form of faster-than-light travel, either through advances in their gravitic technology, discovering lost Xenos methods, or perhaps discovering a psychic race that enabled them to use the warp as do navigators, then they could expand more aggressively. And it's worth noting that the Tyranid also use gravity technology in order to travel. They have those life-form ships, which basically form a gravity well, and in so doing, the Tyranids kind of effectively fold space and travel through. That's how they use a fast and light system. Now, I will also add into this as a potential for the Tau, the Webway. Now, as we just said, I think the potential for some kind of Tau-Eldar alliance is undoubtedly very difficult, but feasible. And so there is the possibility of some limited or supervised use of the Webway, I think, and if that were possible, that would be a major solution to this massive issue for the Tau. If the Tau are truly looking to expand, then I think they will also need some kind of stability framework or other means by which to avoid any caste system conflicts. the rigid Tau caste system could be a serious problem for them in ruling a very diverse galaxy-spanning empire, most especially if they bring large portions of humanity into that empire. Because there would definitely need to be adaptation and allowances made for, say, non-Tau races like humans. If the Tau fail to create a more flexible governing structure, I think it's going to be near inevitable that internal rebellions would be a consistent issue and undo a considerable amount of any progress made. So maintaining stability across newly conquered worlds would be very important, because unlike the Imperium, which rules through brute force, the Tau need to ensure that integrated species remain loyal. If they expand too quickly, also, without securing a population, then rebellions could also, again, collapse their empire from within. So there are many factors to consider in terms of Tau expansion that they need to look at, including if they had allied with some others, pretty much only really the Eldar. Could you see some kind of hybrid planetary founding perhaps take place, where for the first time in thousands of years, maybe a fringe craft world Eldar like Luggernath begin to secure themselves on planets bolstered by Tau defences? But those are the really key things for them to overcome. It's basically their transport and their stability. There's a lot more to the final section that we're about to move into, where we consider just what a Tau expansion could look like into the Charadon sector and beyond. So, now we come to the meat of things. The Tau have identified that Chaos forces are causing a major problem on the edge of the Imperium's central segmentum. Elsewhere, the Tyranid are breaking out, and it is clear that no immediate support is being redirected to the eastern region of the galaxy. Before launching their offensive against the Charadon sector proper, the Tau need to establish a stable logistical network that could support their war effort from their current territory, given the distances involved. This requires the occupation of a series of critical planets that would serve as supply hubs and staging grounds. The first step in this process is the conquest of the shrine world of Eidolim. While ordinarily the Tau may attempt some sort of diplomacy, they have at this point some understanding of the Imperium and its general ideology. So this heavily religious planet steeped in the Imperial cult is both a symbolic and strategic target. They also fully understand that any efforts attempting to sway the world to join the greater good would be not only a waste of time, but undermine any surprise aspect in launching an offensive. So despite fierce resistance from the Ministerium and the local planetary defense forces, the Tau execute a shock assault upon the world with maximal firepower for a swift and brutal campaign. They overwhelm the defenders with a combined arms assault from orbital strikes and airspace denial, combined with major ground assaults. The fall of Eidolim comes so quickly, there is little time to communicate to other worlds. It deals a significant blow to Imperial morale upon the planet, but massive numbers of human citizens refuse to accept any kind of occupation and are unfortunately destroyed as a matter of course to reduce the possibility of uprisings. Word does break out though, and this demoralizing situation disrupts the Ecclesiarchy's influence in the region. Cardinals on other worlds in the Charadon sector panic and attempt to consolidate forces upon their own worlds to preserve themselves. Given the state of the region, they cannot afford to spread these forces elsewhere. They call for reinforcement, but no replies are received. The impact of the fall of Eidolim is a double-edged sword though, for while it may allow easier subjugation of neighbouring systems, Cardinal worlds in the Charadon sector are now likely aware of future actions and are preparing their defences, as well as notifying other planets in the systems. For the Tau though, they have made a sufficient staging point, and moved to repurpose key frontier worlds next, such as Dreer and Borthraeus. These planets, once home to scattered human settlements and primitive feral societies, are swiftly transformed into advanced logistical hubs. The Earthcast work quickly to establish supply depots, manufactories, and drone-controlled fortifications, ensuring that the newly acquired territories could be integrated seamlessly into the Tau's growing sphere of control. Not all, but some of the human population are absorbed into the new world by the Tau, especially on the Feral world, who are more than happy to be granted this opportunity. In securing these worlds, the Tau create a stable corridor linking their existing empire to their intended target in the Charadon sector. With supply lines firmly established, the true campaign can now begin. Now, just as a reminder, the Tau invasion here is my speculative scenario. It's my headcanon of what could take place. The actual state of Charadon is guided by the most recent descriptions given to us after the withdrawal of Typhus's forces. So far as we know, the Charadon sector remains in a horrifying state of destruction, contamination, and significantly depleted defences, which is why it is so ideal for a Tau invasion. So I imagine that a Tau conquest of the Charadon sector, made possible by a cascade of other destabilising factors for the Imperium, leaving it stretched thin by major conflicts they're locked in against, Chaos, Orcs, and Tyranid incursions. Importantly, these would not just be offensives requiring a standard defense of territory, but of a scale which threatened the heart of the Imperium itself. Consequently, a vast recall of Imperial forces was required. Recognizing the vulnerability of the Charadon sector, the Tau then initiate a swift and decisive offensive. They leverage their mobility and intelligence capabilities to strike at the most viable target, but also against worlds which remained strategically valuable planets. Once the logistical stepping stones between Tau territory and the Charadon sector are established, what they discover upon their arrival in the system is far worse than they expected. Many of the planets targeted for conquest are in fact in a dire state, ravaged by war, pestilence, and decades of Imperial mismanagement. Cities are reduced to smouldering ruins, streets are still choked with the bodies of the dead, infrastructure is crumbling, entire continents are uninhabitable by the unchecked spread of the pollution, radiation, and the plague corruption of Nurgle. Many of the surviving populations were very sick, malnourished, and living in a state of near total despair, clinging desperately to their faith in the Emperor as the only thing keeping them from utter collapse. Anarchy had followed in the wake of the Chaos withdrawal, where mutants, rogue servitors, and other malefic entities continued to roam. Few found cause or opportunity for Imperial celebration. The prime industrial cluster within the Mechanicus Forge worlds were also heavily infected. For example, upon Forge World Metallica, mutated growths were seen throughout mechanical surfaces and corrupting its ancient data network. While initially the Mechanicus had appeared to contain the phage through a massive network purge, many cycles later the disease appeared anew, and it has since appeared again and again in an endless cycle of manifestation and purgation, all of which was terrible for the Imperials who survived. But upon their first engagements, this equally presented an immense challenge for the Tau, because they were not simply conquering an enemy, but engaging upon worlds teetering on the brink of ruin and that faced them with very real threats of contamination for themselves. Their military campaigns had to be urgently adapted to this war zone, accompanied by massive logistical efforts to stabilize what remained of these devastated planets. Pathfinder teams and stealth battle suits would infiltrate key locations, not just to scout them, but also to assess the viability of planetary reclamation and the stabilization of industrial facilities which were at risk of going critical. Initial attacks had to be carefully coordinated to minimize the collateral damage and prevent what little functioning infrastructure remained from suffering complete destruction. So the initial attacks were not sprawling planetary invasions. In fact, that would have been entirely counterproductive. There was no need for this, other than on some of the Forge worlds which had remained more substantially intact, or upon those which had been reinforced with some of that relief force from Indomitus. But most of that had moved on to now other, more pressing engagements. So the Tau would deploy precision strikes executed through Manta missile destroyers or Orca dropships, the latter deploying Hunter cadres directly onto Imperial command centers, communication hubs, and planetary defense stations. All of which were not at all prepared to repel an entirely new assault from highly motivated, fresh Tau forces. With these critical assets neutralized, the tattered Imperial forces were left completely disorganized and highly vulnerable. In line with their greater plan, though, these units would be deluged with propagandistic messages reminding them that although the enemies of the warp had left, their own forces had abandoned them, as was evident by the fast securement of the planet, and that they were now very much on their own. The Tau offer any humans who would listen hope, and quickly begin to provide aid and new shelters for them to recover. For those who would not listen, internment was the only option, and for the most disruptive, a swift end. In time, the Tau knew with their experience in adapting and negotiating with aliens, especially humans, they could likely turn many of the battered survivors of these worlds to their cause. However, even with relatively swift victories, the reality of governing these shattered worlds weighed heavily on the Tau war effort. For while the process was repeated upon neighboring Imperial worlds, the strength of these varied considerably. Some assaults took days, others weeks and months. On the most heavily entrenched planets, long-range bombardments by hammerhead gunships, broadside battlesuits, and sky rays further crippled the enemy defenses, softening up targets before the main ground forces. The Tau strategy was not to commit to costly frontal assaults, as was typical of the Imperial battle doctrine. Instead, the Tau would focus upon dismantling Imperial resistance with surgical engagements. They often focused upon targets which seemed less critical to the defenders, but ultimately reduced their capabilities and readiness. Eventually, when the Tau broke out with true major assaults, they used primarily again the broadsides, storm surge, crisis suits, with bombardment from sun sharks and vast swaths of fire warriors. The Imperials collapsed readily. These initial Tau victories were all but assured given the state of affairs for the Imperials, yet their most difficult challenge for the Tau vanguard was still to come. Following their initial victories, the Tau prioritized securing and fortifying the newly acquired territory. Ships patrolled the space surrounding newly conquered worlds, which were being actively reinforced. The Earthcast needed time and security to set up ground defences, and for those major industrial and habitation centres to be readily patched as much as possible before heavy defences were being installed. The Tau also began to deploy the likes of the terrifying KX-139 Supremacy units, which are primarily designed for defence and for repelling any Imperial ground assaults. Rapid expansion without adequate defences risked an overextension and then an inevitable Imperial counterattack. So to deter this, the Earthcast immediately began repairing what they could before beginning construction upon those heavily fortified bastions, supply depots, and sometimes using Imperial tech to also bridge the gap. While the Tau have their own version of shielding, void shield generators, for example, that were still functional could be used, whilst elsewhere they were able to install their own Tau-designed gravitic shielding. Collectively, their efforts sought to ensure that each occupied planet could have some chance to defend itself in the short term and build a foundation of heavy defences that could withstand future long-term engagements. A crucial aspect of this phase was the dismantling and repurposing of captured forge worlds. This would be the most challenging and very costly aspect for the Tau in the conquest of Charadon. Unlike a decent contingent of the human populations, the Mechanicus would for the most part not be integrated into the greater good due to their deeply ingrained techno-religious dogma. Only the most radical among their number, who sought technology and knowledge by any means necessary, rationalized their defection to the Tau, however best made sense to them. For the rest, their devotion to the machine god and reliance on archaic Imperial technology made them entirely incompatible with Tau ideology. As a result, the Tau waged a brutally systematic campaign to exterminate all vestiges of the Mechanicus, believing, rightly, that any element of their number could significantly disrupt their future installations. The battles deep underground in the Forge Worlds were some of the most intense fighting seen, with stealth suits and fire warriors battling in claustrophobic conditions. The Kroot and Vespid were highly beneficial here, as they were able to easily move through the dark industrial terrain of the Manufactorums more readily than the Tau cadres. The ultimate cost for the Tau in terms of lives here was very high, but steadily the tech priests, Skitarii, servitors, and all manner of bizarre constructions were systematically destroyed. Elsewhere, the Tau felt the potential pressure of an incoming relief force by the Imperials. The paranoia was very high, and so they hastily were already repurposing industrial facilities for Tau production, even while audible combat was still taking place in other sections of the facilities adjacent to or directly below them. Consequently, the Earthcast engineers were highly motivated by the prospect of any descending Imperial shock units and quickly restructured the forges, incorporating Tau technological advancements to them. On the surface now, those same heavy battlesuit deployments, XV-88 broadsides, riptide, storm surges, all formed static defensive lines designed to make any Imperial counterassault prohibitively costly. Drone swarms provided automated defense solutions using Markalite-assisted targeting to eliminate incoming threats efficiently, while shield drones were also deployed to mitigate the effectiveness of Imperial artillery and mid-range infantry fire. The Tau had learned significant lessons from the devastating and highly costly losses endured during the Damocles campaign, and seeing how the Imperials crushed them there now enabled their forces to maintain positions with what they had calculated should be considerably less casualties. But beyond raw military power, the Tau urgently needed to also leverage their ideological advantage to sway those disillusioned human populations. While a minimal percentage, 15 or 20% so far, had defected to the greater good, re-educating the remaining Imperial citizens had proved immensely challenging due to their deeply ingrained religious devotions. The influence of the Adeptus Ministerium and centuries of indoctrination had made it very difficult to supplant their belief in the God Emperor with the ideals of the greater good. Nonetheless, the Tau persisted in their efforts, employing advanced propaganda, social incentives, and gradual ideological restructuring to integrate human populations into their empire. They even brought in humans from other worlds that they had spent decades living under Tau rule. In some areas, this proved to be effective, with an increasing rate of acceptance by the humans being held, but other instances saw those same humans brutally beaten to death at the hands of their own. Overall, it was still considered to be a worthwhile expense to endure. One of the most significant turning points in this came when Tau scientists were able to discover a remedy that had significantly aggressive reduction effects of the rampant plagues which had devastated parts of the Charadon sector. Utilizing advanced medical technology and insights from allied alien species, the Earthcast developed something approaching a cure which drastically reduced the spread and lethality of these infections. Unbeknownst to them, of course, this was in fact largely due to the reduction in warp storms and the strength of influence that was now steadily diminishing. Nonetheless, this breakthrough had a very profound impact on the human population, many of whom now began to view the Tau for the first time as saviors rather than oppressors. The momentum in this outlook grew in some of the detainment areas, and within weeks, significant numbers of humans were now turning to the greater good. By stabilizing plague-ridden planets and ensuring their long-term viability, the Tau not only strengthened their control, but also fostered cooperation with those local populations. Unfortunately, while there were those who could now see firsthand the tangible benefits of Tau governance, others despaired at the manipulation of their own kind. Small outbreaks of rebellion had to be dealt with severely, and infighting was rife. Elsewhere, mass deaths were recorded by those no longer willing to accept the situation as it had played out. Overall, though, the conquest of the Charadon sector had become somewhat stable. The Imperium, only beginning to become aware of the situation, was still heavily locked into more serious engagements, and with few forces to spare, only new recruits from Imperial planets could be deployed here, along with some bulk fodder in the form of militias and PDF. A contingent of Astartes was sent to bolster morale, but their efforts proved ultimately futile. The Imperials would attempt to make a standard assault upon one of the occupied Forge worlds, but with little intelligence to go on, they made disastrous decisions, losing thousands of soldiers just in the initial deployment. The Astartes would have more success striking behind lines and engaging centers of logistics, in one case bringing down even a Supremacy armor unit. But they were targeted aggressively by the Tau defenders, who had fully anticipated this, overwhelming them with the likes of the Kroot and Vespid. Contact with the deployed Space Marines was lost, and with few options remaining, the Imperial Task Force commander in orbit was taking heavy fire and had to make emergency warp translation to escape with less than 50% of the vessels they had arrived with. Upon receipt of this news, Imperial commanders raged. The Militarum commander in charge suffered a summary execution, and the remaining forces were sent to the front lines to face the horror of the Tyranids, who, unfortunately for the Imperium so far, had been unstoppable in their relentless assaults. Still, the momentum of those conflicts facing the Imperium had slowed to a degree, but not so much that it would allow any further deployment of forces to Charadon. The retaking of the sector was put on indefinite hold. Charadon was reported as having suffered devastating losses at the hands of the Death Guard, and now with the Tau having moved in, the Imperium realized there was little left to immediately save. In time, they rationalized they could easily return with a massive fleet to crush the aliens and scour them from the Forge Worlds. But for now, such efforts were just an inviable use of resources. For the Tau Empire, Charadon would be a massive achievement in every regard. Through an objective analysis of past defeats, a greater understanding of the Imperium and humanity, executed with surgical balance in their engagements, propaganda warfare and asymmetric strategies, the Tau had begun to transform the sector into a stronghold of the greater good. Their success in this campaign marks not merely an expansion of their power, but as I'll speak to in my final thought, a new chapter in the balance between factions across the galaxy itself. So in this speculative scenario, with Charadon now firmly secured, and with every passing year more defences established, the Tau had carved out a significant foothold within the Imperium's crumbling borders. No longer a fringe power limited to small regional conquests, they controlled a vital sector of Imperial space, rich with resources, industry, and infrastructure that could be retooled for the greater good. The conquest of Charadon was more than a mere victory, it was a transformation, an evolution of the Tau Empire into something greater, but with this came difficult choices. The wider galaxy remained in extreme turmoil. To the galactic west, the Imperium reeled from devastating defeats on multiple fronts, its overstretched defences struggling to contain the relentless tide of the Tyranid Hive fleets, Chaos Assaults, and seemingly senseless, unpredictable Orc rampages. With the Imperium battered and distracted, the Tau faced minimal repercussions for their outrageous seizure of significant Imperial territory. They discussed future options and where threats could come from. If they were to push westward, striking deeper into vulnerable Imperial holdings, they could consolidate their dominance. However, doing so would also bring them perilously close to the fringes of Necron and Chaos-held territory. The undead legions and traitor warbands thrived in the exposed wounds of Imperial collapse. So expansion in this direction risked exposure to the madness of warp entities and forces that even the Tau's superior technology could not easily counter. If they turned south toward Ultramar, this would bring them into direct conflict with the realm of the Ultramarines, one of the most well-defended bastions of Imperial power. Though formidable, an incursion into Ultramar could prove decisive, but only if the Tau could undermine one of the Imperium's greatest strongholds. An extremely dangerous prospect, but if by some miracle it could be achieved, even with a minimal impact, it would send shockwaves throughout the galaxy, proving that even the Emperor's finest were not invincible. This, though, was deemed too much of a perilous gambit, as Gilliman's realm was one of the best organized and most adaptable of the Imperial holdings. A single miscalculation could see the Tau war machine shattered against the unyielding might of the Ultramarines and their successors. What was significantly clear, though, was that wherever they expanded would be fraught with danger. The Orcs remained an ever-present plague, infesting countless worlds and systems, eager to fight anything that moved. The Drakkari lurked eternally in the shadows, raiding parties striking from the webway with increasing confidence and regularity. In one instance, abducting an entire frontier city's population for their twisted amusements. The Tyranid or Necron turning their attentions toward the Tau continued to be one of their most significant fears. The galaxy remained a battleground, and even as the Tau celebrated their victory, they knew that they could not rest for even a moment, as inevitably the next war was already looming. The only question was, would they be the ones to initiate it? However, what came next was not anticipated by the ethereal assigned to the Charadon sector, as the conquest here had not gone unnoticed. Watching from the shadows, the enigmatic Eldar of Craft World Alatok and others within the Eldari race had taken note of the Tau's achievement. Now, Alatok have a well-known hatred for any other than their own race. However, through their initial observation, word spread, and soon craft world Luganath, one of the smaller Eldar craft worlds, arrived to engage with the Tau. While a significant majority among the Eldar remained too proud to admit the reality they all now faced, there were those who were well aware of the relentless threats which haunted them at every turn, and they saw in the Tau one of their only potential allies. Until recently, they had not considered the Tau strong enough to be worthwhile of any real attention, but now they began to see an empire that, unlike the Imperium, was not weighed down by stagnating views of knowledge, bizarre superstition, and an aggressive doctrine of absolute supremacy and extermination of all alien life, led by this unifying power of blind faith. Luganath, having already dealt with the Tau, sent Eldar diplomats who were very welcomed by the Tau. Luganath were always a smaller craft world. The name translates as the light of fallen suns. Their world rune, the Black Sun, is a reference to the lost glory of the original Eldar star systems, and it is said that the Luganath Eldar have turned their backs upon the material realm, for they consider its worlds already lost. This is understandable, considering they have suffered many brutal acts from the likes of Chaos Forces and Drakari assassination raids. However, their ultimate plan is still to come to fruition. While some believe, and it is suggested, that they already reside in the Webway, which may be true, it is their ultimate plan to secede from real space entirely by finding a Webway gate large and stable enough to transport their entire craft world through, and then, within a hidden spar of the Labyrinth realm, create a new home. Which is interesting to consider, as some believe this was the plan of the Emperor himself. However, they are yet to achieve this, having cast off many of the rigid ways of Eldar culture. The Craftworld has become a haven for outcasts of all kinds, from the Harlequins to the Corsairs. So, one may wonder, and for the purposes of today I consider, what if Luganath entertained a short-term, and short-term for the Eldar could be 1,000 years, plan to assist the Tau, and in return they aid with the exploration of a solution for the Luganath plan to leave the galaxy entirely. It's pretty wildly speculative, I admit, but that is my arc for this scenario. After long talks about the state of the galaxy and each other's place within it, an alliance, tentative at first, was proposed. The Luganath Eldar, whose fragmented race had suffered the slow death of millennia, were well aware of the precarious nature of their own survival. They saw in the young and ambitious Tau race a force who could help them not only to survive, but reshape the future of the galaxy. In the years to come, this partnership between the Tau and Eldar could lead to the formation of something new, a galactic civilization forged not through stagnation and dogma, but through cooperation and shared ambition. Together, they could strike out at other imperial realms, challenging its suffocating, decayed rule and pushing back against the encroaching darkness of chaos. With the Eldar's mastery of the Webway and their ancient knowledge, combined with the Tau's technological advancements and military strategy, the Alliance could carve out a domain that neither the Imperium, Necrons, nor even the Tyranids could easily break. Nonetheless, this would not be an easy alliance. Undoubtedly, many among the Eldar would push back against this, and there could be many unforeseeable, dangerous circumstances in the future. But I like to think that this is a possibility. It's an interesting one, and I think it's more viable with a small craft world like Luganath. And to answer my own initial question about if the Tau would effectively just replace one form of suffocating totalitarian rule for another, I think that in this unlikely yet profound alliance between the Eldar and the Tau, it could mark a rare moment of genuine factional evolution, which is rare in the M41 galaxy. This would be an alliance built on pragmatism, mutual necessity, a shared vision of the future beyond just the endless cycle of destructive war. The Imperium had demanded blind obedience and ceaseless sacrifice. Now, this coalition offered something rare in the grim darkness of the far future: stability, purpose, and even hope. And I readily accept that all of this would be somewhat jarring for the setting of 40k, but I imagine that while having some success in creating a new territory of combined Eldar-Tau rule, not all the Eldar would sign up for this, like we said, so likely the expansion of territory would be very limited, but realistically, this is the only way that I can really see the Tau gaining some significant ground and territory. They may have the strength to hold their ground, maybe they can make some expansions, but true galactic domination is going to be a vision for the very distant future. The sheer logistics of it would be too great for any, such as the Tau or Eldar, to achieve anything other than in a timescale of tens of thousands of years. For humanity, of course, this was not a conquest masquerading as liberation, but a genuine opportunity to escape the crushing weight of the Imperium's decaying theocracy. Upon some worlds within the Alliance, humans found themselves in a reality where survival did not come at the cost of soul-breaking servitude. They were not lobotomized or twisted into horrifying human hybrids just for not meeting work quotas. Within the framework of the Tau's ordered society and the Eldar's wisdom, these human populations were given a degree of agency, carefully measured but meaningful. Some could pursue education, others crafts and trades, in some cases even governance in administrative roles. While the greater vision of the Alliance was not theirs to shape entirely, they were no longer just fuel for an empire's unyielding war machine. The greatest challenge for the Alliance was the balance of power between the Ethereals and Eldar leaders. Both were ever manipulative, but far-seeing. Together, they could see the greater good for all, and worked together to ensure that the mistakes of the past did not repeat themselves. They gave leadership and guidance without enslaving, they radiated influence without crushing spirits of the populace, thus allowing the Tau's philosophy of the greater good to blend with the subtlety and the foresight of the Eldar. The result was an order that did not simply demand compliance, but sought to create something more sustainable, a structure in which cooperation was not just enforced, but made desirable. Of course, as I noted earlier, it would be absurd and utopian to just imagine all would be without issue. There would be a great many who would be unwilling to accept the change in both the Tau baby and the Eldar. Some Eldar would leave to pursue their own path, and among some of the humans, the most devout of the Imperium, they were never going to be able to see defection to Xenos as anything other than heresy and treason in its highest form. To those who had ever only known the grim hierarchy of the Corpse God's Empire, such freedom felt foreign, even dangerous. Rebellions could occur, but were generally just crushed with minimal damage. And that is an unfortunate, depressing angle to something that had to be accepted as part of a painful transition toward a better future. But for those who could adapt and embrace this strange new paradigm, life under the Eldar Tau Compact isn't one of oppression, but of possibility. It's a rare anomaly in a galaxy defined by war, a fragile, meaningful peace, where even those with the smallest voices were not entirely lost amid a dystopian nightmare of imperial bureaucracy. So, as always, thanks for watching. I greatly appreciate your time and support today. I hope you have enjoyed this fully speculative imagining as to how the Tau could achieve something heading in the direction of galactic rule. If you did, please do like the video and also tell me below who you would like to see next, when we return with the next episode of Which Faction Could Rule the 40K Galaxy. For today, I did know it would be impossible for me to lay out in the detail required a true galactic expansion of the Tau, but I hope that my musings have sent some thoughts about what that could look like were it ever to happen. In time, I could well imagine how such an alliance with the wisdom of the Eldar and the technological advancement of the Tau could even rise to overthrow the Imperium itself. The dream of the greater good, once limited to the fringes of the galaxy, now had the potential to reshape the stars through the webway access granted by the Eldar. United, they could forge a new golden age, one where reason triumphed over superstition, genuinely this time around, where progress replaced stagnation, and where the horrors of chaos, the Necron, and Tyranid were finally pushed back into the abyss. I would see the Tau's success in this initial campaign as being marked not only as a consolidation, but also the beginning of a new era in the galaxy's ever-shifting balance of power.